Thank you for practicing. It felt a good time to practice in silence, to just tune into what's happening in the body using the breath. So I want to note the date. I don't usually do that, July 14th, 2024. Because yesterday, something quite significant happened in the country, didn't it? Someone, I was going to say, tried to shoot Donald Trump, who was a president last term, and now who's running again for the presidency. And I do think it's important to mention because what my mom said yesterday was, this doesn't happen in this country. Right, so she's born and raised in Belize, and so she said, "This happens in places where we're from." So I didn't want to get into that with her, but there is this perception that in these developing countries, this happens, but in this here, these here. United States of America does not happen that, right? So then the question is, and I'm not also don't because there aren't shoot there people aren't shooting in Belize. But there is a perception, right? Even from people who something happens in this country where there's this sense of order, discipline, a better way of being, there's all kinds of things that we think of. So I heard my mother, but I also heard the perception of an immigrant and how we come as more recent immigrants to perceive our countries of birth, especially if we're moving from places where it's there's lots of poverty, global south, but not just the global south, but like that. And then we come into this country, and now it's like that kind of stuff doesn't happen here. So it sort of begs, as an immigrant for me, it begged the question, because I did tell her, I said, you know, that doesn't, no one's ever tried to shoot the prime minister in Belize. At least as far as I know in the history, and she agreed. And yet there's that perception. So what's going on, right, in the country, in this country where that there's a couple levels, and I'm not going to stay too much on the on these levels because, but there is a perception in the United States of America some kinds of violence doesn't occur. And that these kinds of violence only, these certain types of violence only occurs in those other places, those developing their third world places. And yet, I think we know that this kind of violence occurs everywhere. Right? And the kind of violence I'm talking about is not a violence that keeps getting brought up more and more since yesterday. with just the violence of words, right? The kind of violence of words that has been cultivating and feeding and spreading a violence that could happen like yesterday. And so, yes, we do have violence in the United States of America. It sometimes gets pushed down, repressed, so we don't see it against different identity groups. And I thought about it, like when it's caught on camera, you know, when the violence is actually caught on camera, what happens? What's the story that gets connected to it? So, right. So when the George Floyd and when those kinds of violence are caught on camera, what happens? And then when this kind of violence that just happened yesterday is caught on camera, what happens? Yeah. So I think it's a good way to think about the whole thing and not just what media directs us toward, right? Because it is a directing, right? We're kind of getting led almost like little sheep with the media as far as a story that is told about this country, so that someone like my mother, who knows that's not a truism, because they're looking at the news over and over again and there's this sense that this is true, that the reality as it is falls away and the new reality that's being told about society, it's now a true, this is the truism, this is the truth. So this the reason I wanted to bring it up, well, one, it speaks to where we are as a society, of violence and gun violence. It also speaks of the violence of words and thoughts, and that needs to be there, that precedes this action, the behavior, the gun being used, the hands being used. In order for that to happen, we've been really nourishing the thoughts, the mind, and we've been nourishing, using words and listening to words and consuming, right? It's a fifth training, the consumption. What have we been consuming? What are we consuming in this world that we continue with violence? Who are we listening to, right? And so it brings me back to the six paramitas, because another sangha, in the BIPOC Garrison Sangha that meets on Thursdays at noon, we're studying and practicing with the six paramitas. And some of you, as you know, on Thursday we practiced with the second paramita, which is discipline, good conduct, sila, right? Sila is the Sanskrit and Pali word, right? So, but basically it's, I'm just going to put it in the chat, good conduct, discipline, and sila. So, and for just full picture, as we may know or not, the six paramitas are the what is also referred to as the spiritual perfections, the how we want to train ourselves to be, and that these, if we train ourselves to develop these perfections, to be in like this, that we're moving into awakening. This is what the bodhisattvas do. This makes us a bodhi. This is our training to become a bodhisattva. If we nourish and practice and train in these six ways of being, these characteristics, these way we want to have our body, speech, and mind, right? And we train in them, and we maintain this right view of compassion, and we practice it with skillfulness. So we're practicing and studying these, and I'll say the six just so that for completion, even though we're going to get a little bit into the second, the discipline. So the six are giving, ethical discipline or discipline, or right conduct, all those, that's all the second one, then patience, then diligence, meditation, and wisdom. And so we're going through these. And the reason, though, I wanted to, what came to mind yesterday was, we don't have any discipline. we don't, you know, our ethical conduct is not there, right? And it's not just yesterday, but yesterday is just another, like, piece in the puzzle of what here has been happening, because of what's being nurtured, what's being consumed, this lack, really lack of discipline of body, speech, and mind. We're wallowing in it. And so here, you know, for me, the first thing I thought was, and of course, it's because I've been reading more and writing more in my own way of preparing for the Dharma sharings and our sanghas around the second one. And so it just really just jumped up and said, okay, here we are. And particularly because discipline, this ethical discipline, it's a whole way of being. It's like guidelines for how we want to be and engage in the world, right? That we have an ethical code. We actually have a way that we want to be, that we want to follow. Not just to be a good person or a good human being, but to be a bodhisattva, to be on this path of awakening. So it's bigger than, oh, it's just nice, it's a good thing to do. And it's also our waking up. And so, okay, clearly shooting someone is not waking up. Especially because this is a violent act that is not being done in a way to try to prevent harm. And I don't even want to get into maybe the deeper places that we might say, well, but I'm going to talk about it because, you know, there's nothing to hide, honestly. So someone might say, taking out Trump will stop the bad actor, right? It will lessen harm for others because here's a person who embodies speech and mind, really, unfortunately, embodies a lot of violence, right? Someone who we really need to pray for, someone who really has a lot of suffering, that everything that comes from them is violence, right? So one might say that the person who shot or attempted, and who knows, right? That's why it's kind of hard to get into the specifics, because there's I think so many unknowns, and I really should just stay in my lane and just stick with just the fact that shooting someone shows that we are in a real, where we continue to be in a place of ethical dilemma. Because you see, shooting Black people, brown people, certain groups of people, kind of just continues on and goes sort of unnoticed sometimes, unless, of course, it's caught on video, right? And then all of a sudden, it's like, oh my gosh, we're shooting people. Shooting white people. And it's caught on video. It's a whole other story. It just takes it to other levels, right? Because it says something about what is being consumed to make a person do something like that. Right? And then it's this figure of a human being who this person embodies and happens to be in this world, in this walk right now, which is the person that we mentioned, right? And so it just shows that we're in a real ethical dilemma, because whoever, and I actually haven't followed up, I stopped following it, because I think that's part of the consumption, right? Is like, how much is too much? When do we stay informed, and when are we like addicted? And what is it watering in us, right? Like, what stories are going off in my head as I'm listening? So I haven't really gotten more information as far, but you know, I speak to my mother every night, and she's actually often my first news source, because she did. She is the one that told me last night. But that's part of the, I think, the consumption too, is we want to be informed. You know, we may be in positions where we, certain news and information is part of how we are working. And still there is a place, I think, where consumption can be too much. So I think that's part of our discipline too, right? The non-addiction to news and what we're consuming. So I'm not going to go into that lane I was going to go. I'm going to come back here, and I'm going to stick to the teachings around discipline and why it's so important. If we're practicing on this path, for us to stay very focused on how we take care of our body, our speech, and our mind, in every single thing that we do, right? So, and what is it that we need in these moments where everything's on fire, right? Things that we're kind of used to are not happening. Things that we're not used to are happening. We still have barely recovered from COVID. The isolation from that still has a big mental health effect on many people. And so we're still in this kind of period of recovery. And then we have these people, you know, quote, leaders of the country acting very ignorant, yeah? And not having ethical conduct, not having ethical conduct. In moments like these, as practitioners of the Dharma, of people on this path of awakening, of Buddhas to be, of people who want to nurture more this truth that's in us, this kindness that's in us, this perfect understanding that's in us, how do we take care of that? How do we not get pulled by the majority? How do we not get pulled by the collective energy that is having an impact on us, right? So I think this is a, I think this discipline, this second paramita, is really a good one for us to practice with, because it gives very clear examples of what is it that it, do we, what do we do? What are the positive things we try to do? And then what are the things that we don't try to do, right? So I'm going to share my screen, and this is the same discussion from that we were in on Thursday, because I, as some of you know, it's hard in 10 minutes to do justice to anything. I wasn't really able to discuss much on it, but this is the second paramita, ethical or moral discipline. And I think the really important thing about this one is there are guidelines that are helpful for us to keep remembering what is it and how do we want to be on this path of practice, right? And some of us already have taken the 5 mindfulness trainings, some have taken the 14. So those are basically foundational. Those are the guidelines that help us say, I want to go in this direction. These are things that are going to keep reminding me, right? For example, the 5th mindfulness training, which I mentioned before, on consumption. Consuming in such a way that it nourishes our bodhisattva mind. It nourishes our bodhicitta, right? And so recognizing that this is the thing, so it keeps us on the path, right? So that if we're consuming something where the mind starts shifting to something that's not so positive, our trainings are there to bring us back. That's why they're guidelines, right? And we all need guidelines. And the guidelines help us stay on this path of practice. And right now, when we have a collective mind, a collective consciousness that's in chaos, these are the more important times for us to really have a moral compass. We have to really be clear on how it is that we're going to be. So the guidelines are always there. And in times like this, we really need to go back to them. Right? We need to, you know, if we're feeling, these are times where we start feeling swayed, we feel there's too much going on, you know, it's like the tree in the wind, it's really blowing hard, right? It's like, there's a hurricane of a collective conscious that's abounding right now, right? People are scared, we don't know what'll happen, you know, if Trump wins or if Biden wins, people feel it's going to be chaos either way. So there's this level of collective uncertainty that's just whirling like a hurricane wind, right? It's like a storm that's brewing, and it can easily take us off our path. It can be like the tree that just falls over because it's not solid enough to withstand these winds, right? And so what do? Well, we have tools. Right? So that's what this is about. This is all about is we have tools, folks. We have tools. And if we forget that we have tools, this is when our mind has gotten caught up already in the chaos. Because that's what the chaos is there to do. It's to make us feel like we're part of that, right? It pulls us in and now we're part of that. And the tools that we have, such as these set of guidelines, precepts, trainings that help us, what it's saying is, no, we have a path. We have a path. And yes, many things will happen. But what this path of practice is saying is that as things come up, we know how to take care of them, right? We know about speech. Right. So here are the things we do. Right. We know about speech. What are we going to do about speech? We're not going to lie. Right. We're not going to use harsh speech, even in times like this, when it's going to be easier because the chaos is abounding and everything is up and the collective energy is influencing and pulling. It is up to us as practitioners. And I'm serious about this. As people who are Buddhist practitioners, it is our duty to be that moral discipline for a world that seems to have been losing it for a while now. And it's not just us. It's not just like, well, Marcel, what do you mean? Me? Like little old me? No, you got a whole 2,500 years of practice tools. And if you start to think this is just me, that's an ego talking right there. That's ego saying it's just me and what? No. I'm not saying that. I'm saying if you think that you're a practitioner, that's one thing. But if you know you're a practitioner, then you know already that there's a path that you're on. And even when the collective is acting like it is right now, it doesn't mean you're not still a practitioner. It means that the collective is acting in a certain way. Maybe I need to hold those precepts a little bit more. Maybe I need to recite them every day instead of once a week or however. Because that's what a practitioner is aware. They're aware of what's needed in the moment. And because we're in a collective moment of chaos, of continued recovery that keeps getting more things put on, it means our wisdom is one that says, I need to really look at these trainings, these precepts, the things I need to avoid, and the things I need to do. Right? What's my speech going to be like? What's my mind like? How am I maintaining right view? How am I staying away from ill will? Right? When things like what happened yesterday, what was the first thing our mind had in it? And how do we take care of that mind so it stays in positive, in respect and consideration, right? In kindness and consideration, in friendliness, in being kind to others, in honesty, in being helpful. And this public and private, this is a big one, right? Like what we're thinking when things like this happen and what we say. We want it to be consistent. And this is where our mind, which is usually the last thing to transform, right? Our bodily behavior transforms first because it's public facing often. So it helps us. That public facing helps us sometimes. The speech is the next to be transformed because a lot of that is public facing often, right? We're speaking with someone. But the mind is the one that no one sees but us. And so this is where this integrity, the non-hypocrisy of our practice comes in to remind us what. And it's not to repress either, right? It's to say, huh, I see me. Let me look into this and to follow it. Why did I have that? What's that? Where is that coming from? Where am I feeling hurt? Where am I taking it personal in order to have this thought, right? Because it's part of this. Taking it personal that leads us down a certain road of how we are going to speak or act or think, right? The story from the Buddha of the man who what is it? He went to the store to buy something. He'd never been to the store before. There was another person, another man there who started cursing him, just telling him negative things, just cursing him out. And the man was beside himself. He thought, I don't even know this person. Why is he making me feel so bad and curse? And the man just kept cursing him out. So he goes back home and he tells his wife, and there's a lot more to this. Okay, I'm just really being brief with it. And then the wife tells him, oh, he, because the man's describing who the person was, what he looked like that was assaulting him, verbally assaulting him, really being violent to him, right? And the wife said, oh, that's the person who's mentally ill. He had an accident, and ever since the accident, he just curses everybody out. He doesn't know them. He just follows them around in the marketplace and curses them out. And then the man went back to the store because he didn't get what he needed to get because he was so upset by being, how he was being violated. And then here comes the man again. When he went back, he starts cursing him out again. But this time, the person didn't feel personally assaulted, because now it was this, it was something that he did to everyone. So he didn't take it personal. And so the man kept violating, verbally violating him, and he got his thing that he went to get. And even another person in the store said, don't pay any mind to him. He's, don't pay attention. He does that to everybody, right? So this one around consistent behavior, and actually any of these, whenever we take things personal, we have a different response. Just like this man, when he felt he wasn't personally being attacked, this was a behavior of the aggressor, right? And it even offered, gave him empathy, because this person was doing it to everyone. It was an illness, right? And so how do we, in these times now, where we're prone to taking things personal, because we have trauma, we haven't healed it, things that aren't ours trigger ours, right? And so in these times that are so chaotic, how do we maintain that clarity that it's not, this isn't personal, right? And how do we allow that to help us move away from ego and even have empathy and kindness? Because the last part of why we practice good conduct and ethical discipline is that anything that we're doing, someone else is going to benefit or not benefit from. Whether it's the person we live with, whether it's in a classroom setting, whether it's in a work setting, whether it's walking down the street. We are always a model. Someone is always noticing. And how are we going to show up? And again, I don't want to put a lot of pressure on us, but we are practitioners and we say we want to get free. And these are the times that are going to try us. Yeah? These are the tests. Do we need another test? No. Do we have a test right now? Yes. And so how do we stay on our path of freedom, right? And not come off our path, this bodhisattva path. We're still developing moral discipline. Because there's chaos in the world, how do we not go off but stay present? And how do we, in that crowd who may not have the moral discipline that we are cultivating, how can we be a model for them? Because this is what the world is looking for right now, is bodhisattvas. People who are clear that they have compassion in their hearts and that they're on a path of understanding and awakening. This is what is needed. And so anything that, however we show up or whatever we want to contribute right now to this world that's on fire, it's going to be how we show up. And so this practice right now, all these tools that we have, right? The trainings, the 5 mindfulness trainings, the 14, the 4 Noble Truths, the Noble Eightfold Path, the Brahma Viharas, the 6 Paramitas. We have so many tools at our disposal that I invite us to really practice with them. take up what it is that you want to practice for a week or a month, and go deeper. Go deeper still. If you think you've gone deep, go even deeper. Because right now it's the depth of how deep we can go, how much we can root down of this collective consciousness that's trying to take us off base. The deeper we root, the more solid and steady we'll remain. And this isn't just for us, this is for the world right now, right? We need to model the world that this is possible. So thank you for your listening. I will invite the sound of the bell for us to breathe together. Deep breath in and deep breath out. Let it all go. Any tightening or grasping of words, just let it flow away.